Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. All July long, we're doing something a little different around here. We're calling it our summer replay series, and honestly, we're pretty pumped about it. We've gone back through the archives and handpicked some of our all-time favorite episodes to bring back for the summer. Think of it as the greatest hits, conversations that stuck with us and that we just knew you'd love to hear again. If you're new to the show, welcome. This is such a great way to get acquainted. And if you've been listening for a while, you're going to love this too. Some conversations just hit maybe a little bit different the second time around. So whether you're poolside, road tripping, or already full on back to school prep mode, we hope these episodes are a perfect companion to that. So grab your iced drink of choice, get comfortable, and let's do this. We talk a lot about MTSS at the elementary level with foundational skills, but MTSS is becoming more and more commonplace for secondary schools to implement. So today we are going to chat with a couple of educators from the field, Kristen Ruffert and Rhonda French from Medina City Schools in Ohio. They are here to share all about their secondary implementation. Welcome, ladies.
Hey there. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, we're so glad you're here. So to start out, let's just have you share a little bit about your roles and Medina, and then kind of where you guys are at with the MTSS implementation.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Rhonda French. I'm the Assistant Director of Pupil Services at Medina City Schools. This is my seventh year as a district administrator in Medina City Schools. And for nearly a decade prior, I was a school psychologist in another life, it feels like.
I'm Kristen Ruffert. I'm starting my second year in the district as an MTSS coach with grades 9 through 12, and I'm primarily at Medina High School. Before that, I taught 13 years of gen ed high school science.
So she's actually our expert today. So Kristen and I are a part of our pupil services department in Medina City Schools. Our pupil services department is me as the assistant director. We have a director of pupil services, Mina Pizica. We have a coordinator of special education, a behavior specialist, and we have three MTSS coaches, which we were able to add to our team last school year. So Kristen is at the high school, Maria Colige is at our middle school, and then Abby Banning is at our elementary schools. So our district, we have a preschool building, a standard alone preschool building. We have five elementary schools, we have two middle schools, and we have one high school. And then we also have a school that specializes in behavior support for students with disabilities. So for our purposes today, we're going to primarily chat about our high school, where we currently have just under 1,800 students enrolled. And to give a little bit more background about Medina, so Medina is a suburban district in Northeast Ohio, and we are at just under 6,000 students total.
So for the high school specifically, we're very much still in the very early stages of MTSS implementation. I took on this role last year for the very first time. And prior to that, whether or not our staff had even really heard of the acronym MTSS was questionable. So we did a lot just within a year of getting that kind of that knowledge base and some of the foundational work. Within just a year of implementation, we've managed to form building level teams where we have a tier one, like a PBIS and MTSS committee that meets monthly. And then we've developed a tier two specific focus on looking at how to get tier two systems in place within our building. And then we're pulling in data for things like test scores, STAR screener data, and we're using the DESA, SEL Universal Screener. Last year was the first time that our high school had even really used SEL screener for any reason, and we chose to use the DESA through Branching Minds to do that. And in the second year, what we're starting to use from Branching Minds is the graduation risk report a little bit more and pulling data from that to start to make decisions for students with tier two needs. As far as some decision-making things and instructional changes that we've been able to do since our implementation, the district has developed an SEL committee And our focus has been developing district-wide tier one lessons for pre-K to 12. What my focus is right now with tier two especially is we've had a small group study hall that now it's called a connection study hall. And I'm working to make the focus of that more of a structured support for tier two for students.
Well, it sounds like you have done a lot of work to get yourself sort of where you're at today. And we'll kind of dig into that in a little bit. But since we are talking to secondary, I would just like to ask a kind of fun question sort of to set us off. What is a misconception that you might have had about high school before you started high school?
Before I went to high school, I thought that it wasn't going to be fun. I think you are so anxious and overwhelmed and nervous about high school that I was just in my mind, I thought it was going to be terrible. And it was not. I met my best friends in high school. It was a great time. And interestingly, from that experience, obviously as a school psychologist, I'm very much into research and I'm a nerd and I love, you know, thinking about research studies and how they impact my life and my profession. And so many years ago, and I can't remember the reference to this research study, but it basically said that 80% of the situations that you have anxiety about or you're nervous about end up being positive or neutral. So, you know, it's an interesting perspective because, you know, not all situations you're nervous or anxious about, but 80% of them that you are going to be just fine. And so I feel like that was my high school experience, is that I was so nervous about it. And it was one of those 80% times where it all just ended up okay for me.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand. I was also very nervous. Kristen, what about you?
I don't remember being nervous so much because I feel like I don't know what I was thinking, but I do remember watching movies about high school, like Clueless or Mean Girls or something. And I was like, oh, that's what high school is going to look like, is everyone's in these very specific cliques and people are mean to each other all the time. So that part, I think, was like, oh, I don't know what that's going to be like. And I was surprised to find that when I got there, so I was a band nerd and I started ninth grade with that group of people already incoming in marching band. And what I found over the years was yes, there are cliques and yes, there's groups that you know, kind of gravitate to. But my best friends that I brought up with me from kindergarten, we ended up in three different cliques in high school. One was in drama, one was in a cheerleader, and I was in band, and it was still okay to interact with each other. And I think it was refreshing to me that it wasn't just like the movies.
I do think that many people who think about American high school and they refer to movies, I've heard that before. So, okay, let's dig into MTSS implementation. You know, I know it's like, I know that you're kind of at the beginning of the process. It sounds like you've done a lot of work to kind of get where you're at today. And so I would love to sort of talk about what did supporting students in your high school look like before you started that implementation of MTSS?
And I know Kristen would say absolutely nothing. There was nothing done to help kids. And her perspective is so interesting because she's coming from general education. So again, you know, my background is as a school psychologist. I primarily worked in special education before I became a district administrator. So her perspective is one I very much value. But in this case, I will say that she's probably a little bit wrong when she says nothing. In that, you know, in our high school, in all high schools, everyone has good intentions for kids, and there are good things happening, whether it's systematic or not. And I think that's so important to remember. So you might say, like, my school doesn't do MTSS. And I would probably argue that you do some things, but it might just not be systematic. So, you know, we weren't regularly looking at data to make decisions. We were placing students and worried about placement more than services and what the services to address issues are. I think prior to, you know, Kristen's involvement and more of what we've been able to achieve in relation to our secondary MTSS is that the fidelity of the implementation was not great, is that we weren't doing it consistently, and also we weren't necessarily doing it efficiently. So a lot of individual decisions versus, you know, more group-based decisions. But really, I mean, overall, kids got help. You know, good things happened at our high school. And again, all high schools, even if it's not systematic, it's just not efficient. And because, you know, we go through things in our district of up and downs, budget constraints, and other things that might make limitations on staff and instructional supplies, we needed to make sure, and we need to make sure that it's running very efficiently.
I think that part of, I think, implementing MTSS at the secondary level is sort of the visibility of the work that's being done is kind of key for secondary teachers, because secondary teachers tend to sort of keep to themselves. Kristen, did you want to add anything to your impressions? We won't let Rhonda speak for you.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like, I mean, I'm hard on myself naturally. I'm kind of an overachiever. So when I say nothing's happening, it's because it was very much like I, as a gen ed teacher, didn't realize at all that these systems existed until I, you know, jumped into this role and was like, oh, this is how it's supposed to be done. And this is what we have to work on, you know, changing so that we're looking more big picture. But that's exactly what you were talking about with our work being very siloed. It was pretty much me in my classroom, and my job is to teach the content, you know, and make it engaging and make sure the kids are, you know, achieving. But it's kind of put on you as like, you are the content expert, and that is your class, and you're responsible for that group of kids. And then they leave you and a new group comes in. And so I think it's very challenging to start implementing something like this in a secondary building where you've got a lot of moving parts. You have teachers who don't necessarily see their kids very much, meaning like if you see them 45 minutes a day, and then they're gone, and then you see them again, compared to the contact time that an elementary teacher would have, and that relationship that they're able to build with the amount of time they do see that student is just very, very different in secondary. But with that being said, but I've taught 9th, 11th, and 12th grade science, and I feel like coming from that setting, it felt like a one-size-fits-all. Like, you're there to expel the information, you're there to give them the knowledge and then see if they achieve or not, and then worry about, I don't have time to reteach it, and then move on, you know? And I think that one size fits all, it's like if there's nothing in place to help support kids who don't succeed with the, you know, the first version of what you're giving to the kids, it's kind of like a, oh God, they need help. And then we immediately assume that they need specialized support. So without that system in place of understanding what you can try first, and how that takes time to really develop, oh, okay, well, maybe just they need a little bit extra within the classroom, and they needed it differently within the classroom. Without that concept, I think high school in general struggle with. And it's not that RTI didn't exist necessarily. It's just to what extent were we asked to really collect the data and do it to fidelity I think it's very up to the building.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it makes me think about, I was in a situation where we started to implement RTI, and an assistant principal came into our PLC, our department meeting, and this was at, you know, middle school, and was like, hey, we're going to do RTI, get me a list of kids that struggle. And I was like, okay, it was kind of a broad ask, and it wasn't very specific. And there wasn't a system of like, okay, so which data do we use for determining what they're struggling with, you know, and what's going to happen. And it really put a lot on us as a teacher to like, oh, we need to figure out which ones are struggling and then implement a specific targeted intervention for them. And that was just a lot to ask of a teacher who had, you know, 120 students that we see throughout the day. And we're like, you know, and it just adds a lot to the workload. So I think that that's where it is about, like, is there a system in a place to like support the secondary teacher mm-hmm. in that work if they're being asked to that? Because I feel like the building wide system can help support that work of the individual teacher. Because I just know as a teacher, I always felt like I'm responsible for these kids to learn these things, and it put a lot of pressure. And so mm-hmm. I think that you're right in that sort of impression. Rhonda, is there anything else you wanted to add? Sorry.
Yeah, it can change in a year, right? So that's where we were. But like, think about what Kristen said at the beginning, and that like all of the stuff we've done, and it's only been just over a year. So I often have to take all of our coaches back to be like, hey, remember a year ago when we all would have said nothing was in place? Like, look at where we are now. And I think it might seem slow, especially once you gain the knowledge, is that you really have to take a step back and analyze that like overarching and that overview data where it's like, okay, here's where I actually was and here's where I am now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So let's sort of move on to talk a little bit about, you know, you're going to start implementing this MTSS at the secondary level. And I know that there's a lot of challenges in that. And we talked a little bit about just people's knowledge base around MTSS. But I guess my question is, for your specific context, what were some of those challenges or barriers that you encountered? And then maybe what were your ways of approaching those challenges?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to mention that one of the reasons that our district actually added coaches and kind of looked to make our system, basically overhaul our MTSS system, was because we had state findings related to disproportionality. So, you know, outside of this conversation, we have done a lot of work related to things like equity, diversity, inclusion, which is a whole nother podcast. And so I think it's important to mention that, though, because that was the impetus for us to do the work. So it was like, hey, here are, you know, these negative outcomes for certain populations of students, and you really need to clean up everything else that's coming before identification of special education, because these things are happening in your district. And so when we committed to the work, we knew that because we need to change these outcomes in relation to disproportionality. And so our motto became, we're going to do it slow and right versus just doing it for the sake of doing it. And so our barriers were, you know, why we had to do the work, things like mindset, et cetera. But then it was, okay, we're going to stick to this motto where we're going to make sure that it's going to be done right before we move on to the next thing. So I think the hardest thing has been that it's been a slower than typical process, I would say. But I think because of how we're approaching it, it has been much more well received.
Yeah, 100%. And I think from my perspective within the building, so I taught in the building for 9 years before becoming a coach within the same building. So I had the benefit of knowing the staff already, and I didn't have to establish the original relationship with them. I knew who I was working with. But in shifting into this role, I had to start navigating early on last year, kind of where we were at as a building in terms of what they did know and what they were, I guess, aware of what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing or haven't tried yet. And so a lot of that first part of that year was me figuring out that not only was there the barrier of, you know, like they've been used to doing something for one way so long that it's just, you know, it's asking 130 plus teachers probably in one building to change what they're doing, right? And so that, why are we doing this? Why are we adding more websites, more platforms, more things to do? What is this SEL screener? We've never done this before, you know? And so it was like kind of adding in all those additional pieces and new ways to approach thinking and, I don't know, things to click on, things to understand. That part of it, I think, on top of all the stress of, well, we're putting out fires all the time after COVID with student behavior and concerns and attendance and everything else that goes along with what school now is, that's been challenging. But I've tried to approach it from more of a perspective of, if we work together and kind of look bigger picture, instead of putting out all those fires reactively, if we approach it more proactively as a whole, then it will prevent eventually down the road those things that you have to deal with constantly. And so trying to approach it from that perspective and then continuing to make myself available for our staff for support. Like, I am here for one-on-one support. You just need to reach out. We set up a time. So some of that has kind of allowed some of the shift to start occurring, but it's definitely, I have to remind myself a lot, and Rhonda helps me with this too, is it will not happen overnight. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I imagine that a lot of it is having those continuous conversations with your teams about just like, this is where we're going. This is why this is, you know, and building that knowledge base around MTSS, because I feel like once you kind of understand that concept and you're building the things to help support the work, it's a little bit easier to get the buy-in. It's a little bit easier to like get people on board when they feel supported, because if they don't feel confident in what they're doing, it's harder for them to buy into to everything. So that makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, we talked a little bit about this, but let's talk about practical things that maybe you did to help build to to bridge the gap between those siloed teams, because we know that in secondary, the collaboration just looks different than elementary teams. And so you want to talk a little bit about what you did to help build those teams to work together.
Yeah, again, so we were, you know, I mentioned disproportionality before, and because of that, we were required by the state to direct funding to address disproportionality in our district. So we did a couple things, and that is, you know, talking about the practical things that we did, we were forced to do it, but we also had, you know, a limited amount of money that we had to be very purposeful about. So we added 3 coaches to our team, and we purchased an MTSS platform so our coaches would be able to utilize Branching Minds and foster the collaboration. Adding our coaches was very purposeful. Our pupil services team primarily focused on, you know, special education and related services, MTSS to a certain extent, but, you know, it was a fine line between where general education stopped and pupil services began. And we wanted that general education perspective. Adding our coaches, especially Kristen, because she's had the experience in the high school, has been so powerful. And if you, you know, they always say don't house MTSS in pupil services or special education because it's not a special education initiative. And it's not, but your team has to be made up of multiple stakeholders across environments. Otherwise, you are not going to have that organizational buy-in. So we were very particular. So we have Kristen, who was a previous gen ed science teacher, like she said. And then our other 2 coaches have taught middle school, they've taught elementary school, and they were most recently reading specialists. So we are fortunate to have a lot of people on our team with a lot of different knowledge who are then able to make really high quality decisions. And we're able to utilize different people on our team as experts to make those district level decisions that then filter down to things like the high school.
And within the high school itself, when we're looking at collaboration for teams, we have worked over the past several years to get the schedule, which is a beast in itself, in a way that the 9th and 10th grade ELA courses and the Algebra 1 and Geometry courses all have common plan periods. So those teachers have time built into their school day where they are able to meet, and it is every single day. They don't meet every single day, but they are able to. And so they do have weekly meetings where they meet with one of our curriculum coaches to kind of work on that, the work with their STAR data, for example, and kind of how to start teaching some of those teachers how to implement more of the structure into their classrooms, which is now where they're at a point in some of those courses that they've been doing that for longer. Now they can start pulling me in to say, okay, now what, you know, after we've differentiated, kind of what's our next steps and what are we doing with this data? The other thing is our building-wide tier 1 meeting. It was a phenomenal decision to set all of those meeting dates for the school back in May of last year so that everyone who's a part of that team, you know, can prioritize that this is happening and we know it's coming up. And then it gives you a lot more buy-in, I feel like, when people are aware that it's happening and that they know what's on the agenda ahead of time, and that when they're able to prepare for that meeting more appropriately, that's what we're working on, is making the structure of that level meeting more effective for the building too.
I think setting those meetings ahead, like allotting the time in the schedule, because I think that even if you end up canceling a meeting, you know, even if things adjust, it's better to have that allotted ahead of time than it is to wait and do that. I think doing it in May is fantastic. And I even like what you said, the schedule. I know that is a big topic as far as with secondary. The schedule is a beast, like getting it down to making sure that everyone has the right times that they need, and so that they can meet with the people they need to meet with. I think that is, that's a great way to support teachers in the work, is to give them that space and that time. So I would love to hear a little bit about what are some of those results that you're seeing, even just like the small things that you're seeing sort of as things have gotten kind of underway, even in this new school year, that you're like, oh, this is great. Like, we can see the results of the work that you did to set it up.
Well, I do want to lead with saying, prior to disproportionality and initiating any of this work is that it was really hard for us to get data. That was the one thing that we had to clean up first, because we couldn't even, when the state told us we were disproportionate, we were like, what? Like, we didn't even know. So if you're not, you know, systematically collecting the data and reviewing the data on a regular basis, that's something that you have to start with immediately. So even before we had coaches working through Branching Minds with data, we had to clean up our data systems and figure out where we were going and how to, you know, collectively gather it all so we could make better decisions for the district. So that was definitely, you know, in talking about the results, is that even just from then to now, in a couple years' time, I would suggest that we wouldn't have even been able to pull data outside of, you know, academic screening, to now we have a comprehensive system where we can show you lots of stuff.
That's great.
And to speak to that too, I think I'm starting to notice people are, as they're, you know, recording behavior incidents in Branching Minds, it's like, that's the one thing that they were asked to learn how to do. And last year, that was where they clicked, right? So they logged in, they clicked in the corner, and they did their one thing. But now there's people who are like, wait, there's all this stuff on this page now that's populated. And what does it mean? And then what I've noticed, which is monumentally beneficial, is that the teachers now want to know more of, why is this section blank for a kid? You know, so they're starting to see, wow, this would actually be really helpful for me to be able to pull this information for a student and see that if I'm having this issue with the student or they're struggling in this, that other teachers are seeing the same thing. And then that kind of helps with the buy-in too. But the other piece is looking at some of the, so the behavior logging that we've now been able to do consistently for a year. And now we're, previously the high school had, we definitely had major referrals because you have to input that information. but that was pretty much, if there was an office referral and an administrator was involved, it got recorded into a different system. The minor referrals that were happening in the classroom, however, were they were asked to put it in a Google form, but it was kind of on the side, and it was a if you remembered, and it was not used very much at all, honestly, including myself. I would forget it existed. So the minor referrals were not something that we could even rely on for any data. It's been much more consistent with people logging the information. Attendance has been very consistent with cross-logging that for, you know, the student system, as well as so that the rest of the teachers can see the behavior incident. And then it's a lot easier for us to pull that data and say, okay, now that we know where the behaviors are happening or what the behaviors are, and we've been able to work a lot more to establish more we're working towards, okay, how can we actually change maybe what the student is receiving as far as progressive discipline? What can we do during the detention to make that more of a restorative moment for the kids, yeah, so that we can work on fixing the behavior?
Yeah. Well, and I think sort of what you're talking about is just a little bit about the momentum of using a system is really helpful. Even just having that MTSS mindset of like, okay, we need information to help make decisions, to problem solve, to be able, you're like, oh, we can have more access to things that we might need to know about a student to be able to help support them better, and have those restorative, you know, even I think even like thinking like, oh, is there something else in detention that could be just, you know, like a little bit more helpful in supporting the student, not just a punitive kind of thing. And I think that's a big deal with behavior, especially minor infractions. I think it's a little bit about, because that stuff adds up. So I think that I would love to know a little bit, you talked a little bit about fidelity of services sort of being one of those struggles. This is, I'm tossing a curveball to you, but I wanted to follow up about how have you seen sort of the fidelity change? Because it's not going to be great, you know, super, you know, fantastic results immediately, but like, how have you seen the change in that in this last few years?
Well, especially as it relates to the SEL and the focus that we have related to that. Like, for example, I think ever since I've been education, you know, for 15 plus years, is that curriculum-based assessment has always been a thing in relation to academics. So a lot of people have really good knowledge about academic data and how to analyze that or even just look at it in some capacity. But especially with the SEL process, I mean, I think that part is so, you know, foreign to a lot of individuals. And so I think the, you know, the SEL process of screening, identifying needs, offering that instruction, and how to go about it, and the logistics has probably been the thing that we, I don't want to say have had to clean up the most, but had to give out the most knowledge related to and offer PD on, just because a lot of people aren't familiar with it and don't necessarily understand it. Historically, districts have really focused on PBIS and the reward system. And those are fun things, and that's great. And, you know, your behavior matrix, but we're really trying to shift that in Medina to become more aligned with how we approach academics and make sure we're screening, still coupling that with, you know, behavior incident and analyzing that data. But we really want to take a proactive approach to all things related to MTSS. And so really starting at the beginning, and again, going back to that slow and right, just as doing it all at one time. So, you know, making sure that everything and every initiative that we're implementing is being done right.
That's a great point. And I think that many people maybe in the rush of an implementation or to try to see like quick results will rush past that and maybe forget to make sure that each step is done correctly.
Yeah.
In the implementation, because I know that, I mean, that makes a big deal in the results. Cause I think in education, oftentimes people are looking for that silver bullet, the thing that will fix everything immediately. But I think the best work, I always believe, is that it takes a while to implement and to really see those results. So Chris, this is really focused on Kristen and being an MTSS coach, you know, coming from the classroom. I would love to hear a little bit about what you wish you knew before you started the process.
Okay, definitely number one is the I guess awareness that the outcome will not be immediately noticeable. I think it was something that, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, obviously this is a long-term thing that we're working on. But I think it was a big wake-up call for me changing into this role where, like I mentioned before, coming from the classroom and you see if students understand it or not. Well, here it's a much longer road to working with adults to, you know, change habits, change mindsets, get them on board with approaching something completely differently. And it can take years, is what I'm finding is I think I shifted very quickly just because I think I naturally had some of that mindset prior to taking on the role, which I didn't realize I had until I had the role. but I think moving into it was a lot easier for me because of what I was already doing within my classroom with my students naturally. And then I come to find that that's not necessarily commonplace with every educator. And so really working to kind of establish the work that we're doing is ultimately so the students benefit, you know, and making sure that communicating that to everybody consistently and then at every opportunity I can. I think I didn't realize going in how much I would have to continue to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. The other thing also is I think how many people still seem to have almost a limited knowledge of MTSS despite, you know, the information being out there and now working with the staff. But it just depends on in what capacity. Like if it's a whole staff meeting in an auditorium with the size of our group, you know, we're giving them the information or we're having them do what they're asked to do, but are they understanding it fully in that setting? So what I've worked a lot to do is to shift. I've worked with my principal to shift some of the focus of staff meetings into like almost little mini sessions of professional development. So as early as last spring where I was like, the people need the things. I don't know how to give the information other than a large group setting, and it's not working well, you know. And so we've worked to kind of restructure staff meetings so that they're a little bit more meaningful, and we've changed up groups, and we have people sign up for optional sessions that they wanted to learn more about while also wiggling in, but we're also forcing some tier one information at you, you know.
And Kristen differentiates her professional development.
I do.
I think that's really important to mention, is that she differentiates it for adults. And, you know, something that's been difficult is that we have found that a lot of adults that are working with children are technologically not inclined. And so because of that, I mean, she has done a really great job of saying, like, I know this group of people needs this for PD. And so, you know, working with administration, she's been really effective about differentiating what she does for adults, just like we do for the kids.
Well, and that, I think that's so key for professional development. I was an instructional coach myself, so I totally get what you mean by I almost like tiered my staff at one point, because there's mm-hmm. some people that needed more one-on-one intensive support and other people that you know needed that small group. And I get it. It's so hard, because what you're dealing with is people's focus. Like, you're entrenched in this work of MTSS every day. I mean, Rhonda, you probably feel the same way too. It's like you're entrenched in it, so you have this deep understanding of how this should work. And not everyone's focus is in that same way. And it's so hard to get everyone to be, you know, on board.
Yes.
And, you know, really understanding how it applies to their individual work on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause also understanding, I mean, I just came from the classroom. Your priority is your classroom, is being prepared for your students and having your lessons ready. And, you know, and that's not what is on the forefront of their thought process every single day. Whereas mine, yes, it is. And, you know, and so understanding that also, but then 100%, I actually use Branching Minds to differentiate for our staff training based on who has used certain features. And yeah.
Rhonda, is there anything that you would add to that about just what you wish you knew before sort of launching MTSS into the high school?
I think just confusion over Kristen's role. We do have our Department of Instruction, a separate department from ours, focused on curriculum, also has instructional coaches. So I think it took some time for other staff members to really understand the difference between an instructional coach and an MTSS coach. So we're actually right now just in the midst of, you know, trying to develop a flow chart that says, like, if you're looking to get this, then you need to go here. So I think confusion over the coach's role has been a limitation that we've had to deal with. But still, if a person is asking for help in some capacity, just trying to get them the help that they need. So it hasn't necessarily been like the biggest limitation, but just making sure everybody knows who to go to for what. And then, you know, just a focus on the student outcomes and the why of what you're doing. And I think that is obviously why a lot of us went into education, although maybe not with secondary teachers. That is the joke, right? They like to teach the content. They don't like kids. but truthfully, I mean, most people go into education because you like children and you want to improve outcomes. And so just,
we certainly hope that.
Yes. And so that just needs to, you know, sometimes you have to bring everybody back to that. It might be, mm-hmm. you know, a new person that you have to work with, or a new program that you have to implement. But if it's going to help kids, then, you know, there should be some sort of willingness related to that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that often, Kristen, you said something about having to sort of repeat yourself a lot, like kind of say the same, maybe saying the same things kind of over and over again. And I do think that, you know, as you're like, hopefully in the next few years, it won't be as often as more and more people sort of get on board. But I do think that going back to the why of just like, this is the reason, you know, continuing to go back to that. I mean, I know it's always like, remember your why is a cliche statement, but it is really true in the sense of like, you get in the day-to-day and all of the other stuff that comes at you. And you're like, well, why are we doing this again? It's very difficult. There may be challenges on a daily basis, but it's good to remember that. And because sometimes I do think when you are in the classroom, you often forget about sort of the structure of the district or even just initiatives, and you aren't seeing that bird's eye level. You're seeing sort of in the moment. And I always believed of like helping people see the vision is a big part of leaders' roles, is really to be like, what this is, how this all connects, and make that connection for people. So I have a couple more questions. Just the first one is just about, what are you guys looking forward to in the future with Medina and this, you know, you've started a new school year. What are you looking forward to? And in the work that you're doing?
So, I mean, specifically, I just mentioned we're in it for the kids, but student outcomes. I mean, that should be the number one goal, is that there should be, you know, any negative outcomes you might have for kids, like our disproportionality, that should be trending in the right direction. So, I mean, that's the overarching number one goal. But I think from the district level perspective, you know, our administrative team is really trying to work for consistency between buildings. So with the addition of our three coaches who are on our team, with the addition of Branching Minds, with the addition of our SEL committee, we're wanting to make sure that, you know, kids moving grades, moving buildings, that shouldn't be a hindrance to the service that they're receiving, and making sure that things just become more consistent in our district. And then also one thing I'm super excited for is the SEL stuff. So again, I mentioned I'm a nerd, I'm a school psychologist. And so social emotional learning is, I think, you know, such a priority for me personally, that, you know, to have our district from preschool through 12th grade be doing a social emotional screener and taking on the ownership as a school district of addressing these issues in the classroom, I think is, you know, a huge step for us. We were at actually a training yesterday. Kristen in our department was at a training, and it basically said that when teachers are coming out of college, that they don't necessarily have a ton of instruction and classroom management. And when you look at studies that measure student engagement and how much students are participating in curriculum, it often focuses on teaching strategies and, you know, things like, you know, what you're doing with the curriculum. But classroom management, it has the largest effect size when it comes to student engagement. And so SEL is such, you know, like I said, a personal commitment for me, but it should be a huge priority, especially, you know, Kristen mentioned COVID and the behavioral difficulties that we've experienced because of that. So when we talk about, you know, high student engagement, you also have to have, you know, a high level of classroom management, which comes through things like SEL screening, making sure kids have access to tier 2 SEL supports, functional behavior assessments, behavior intervention plans. And so our district, you know, because I feel like we really have, we have a pretty good understanding of the academic component of MTSS, we're trying to shift and say, you know, it is about PBIS, but also that SEL component and making sure kids are available for learning before we're able to do, you know, any sort of deeper learning with them.
Yes. I think that we underestimate. I love that you brought up classroom management as a part of sort of that SEL component. And so that's a really, I love that insight, because I think we don't talk about that enough, or we talk about classroom management as just like learning to be a teacher, but it's also about how you interact with people. And that's so much that social emotional piece as well. And so, yeah, you can't have great teaching strategies and not have great classroom management.
Yeah.
those will most likely fail. So,
yeah.
Kristen, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
So I guess along with that piece, I'm excited to work with the staff in our building to also kind of overcome the misconception that, again, I had it. I mean, I was the same exact way until this role, that when you hear SEL, it automatically means we have to stand and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And, you know, there's some people who are just very resistant to, like, I don't want to do the touchy-feely stuff. What, that's for elementary school. When really it's like training them and giving them the professional development that they need to understand that it's not that. It could be that, I guess, but it's really not that level of intensity. It is, we want the kids to show up and want to be here. So when they're here, what are we doing to establish that sense of belonging? How are we making sure that the kids, you know, needs are met first before we're giving them all the geometry they need? And so I think, like, working with staff to get everyone to a place where that is the building-wide I don't want to call it an expectation. I want to call it a building-wide, where the culture shifts enough to get the building to a place where that is the understanding of, hey, you know what? I'm glad you're here today, you know, and then move on. Just that natural sense of having a student understand that we want them here, I think is what I'm excited to work on so that the students are then able to get the proper systematic support that they do need.
Oh man, that's a great point. I do think helping people understand that what SEL like curriculum or even just initiatives really are about just making sure that the culture and the environment is welcoming and it's a place that they can belong and that they're wanted. I know that was always a big deal to me in the classroom of just making sure of like, hey, I'm glad you're here. Is there anything else you guys would add to someone who maybe is going, we need to do MTSS at the high school? Where do we even start with this? What would you say, like one or two things you would say to them?
I would say just start. I mean, I think that's because there are so many excuses that you can come up with for not doing the work. And I don't care how you start. How we started was just looking at academic data and saying, you know, we're going to finally, and creation of a team and just looking at the data that you did have, I think would be the best place to start to create the ownership. At least some people will begin to get the message and there will begin to be decision making. I would not suggest sitting down as a team without data because we did that in the past and that was very unsuccessful. But really, I mean, just stop making the excuses and do it. It is able to be done at a secondary level. I can't tell you how many times I heard, oh, it's high school, like they don't want to do that or they're not going to be able to do it. And I think that is not an appropriate mindset to have, and you have to get yourself out of that mindset to just be able to say we can do it at any level, because honestly what we're doing is like I mentioned, Kristen was doing differentiation for PD for adults. MTSS is a systematic way of thinking about lots of different things, not only education, but you know, thinking about professional and personal lives. It's still an effective and systematic way to problem solve. And that's how you have to look at it. So that's my advice, is just start, stop making excuses. It can happen at the secondary level.
There's always something that's going on. There's never right, a good time.
And I think too, like MTSS really is an umbrella over a lot of the initiatives that a district might already have. I think I love that you're like, just get started.
Just do it.
Kristen, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, my piece of advice is if you're starting this work at the secondary level, it can very quickly become overwhelming because of just how many moving parts secondary buildings have and how many different staff members a student might, you know, interact with on a daily basis and what happens during all those times. And so what I really had to tell myself towards the end of my first year as a coach is pick one thing to focus on at a time. And right now I'm currently not doing a great job of that, I have to admit, because I do have my hands in like a lot of different places, but I have to bring myself back to saying, you know what, we're not going to fix maybe academics, behavior, attendance, SEL, all at the exact same time. And it's okay to approach the one that I know I can tackle because maybe we do have data for one of those areas. And that's something where we can start.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I love this conversation. I love talking secondary MTSS and just all those things. I know that you guys are doing great work. And so thank you so much for being here. We just really appreciate it. And this is also for those of you listening, Kristen and Rhonda will be at our MTSS summit. So you can hear more about their work. And so this is a great, just a teaser into Medina City Schools' story. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branchy Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.